Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.
Yeah, it's Friday afternoon. It's just gone 4 o'clock. Brian O'Driscoll's getting no audio, but we're going to try and get that fixed very shortly. You're welcome along to the Friday podcast. I don't know if that's what we officially call it every week, Brian, but nevertheless, that's what
I hope not.
That's what I'm running with.
I can hear you.
Okay, well, that's a good start.
If there's any audio from in there,
we could be in trouble. There might be at some point.
Okay, well, maybe just whisper exactly whatever is being said.
Sliding back the fourth wall here as we speak. You're very welcome to the studio. Nathan as well.
How are you?
Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon to you.
We have a lot to talk about. You've been watching back the first test, so we're going to get to that in a bit. And we've obviously Melbourne to look forward to tomorrow morning.
I'm alive.
Audio is in.
I'm good.
It's, you see, all you have to do with those things is turn them on, generally.
That's usually key. It helps.
You know, we're very high on production values around here, Brian, so it's, these things are key. Get in touch with us. We're going to be with you for the next 35 minutes, I think, or thereabouts. So get in touch with us. Keep your comments coming in. And all of that sort of good stuff, and we'll bring them to Brian as we go. So yeah, there's all of that stuff to get to, a lot of rugby to talk about. And I was going to ask you a little bit about if you're watching the golf, but it turns out you've been playing Carnoustie this week, so that's far more interesting. How did you get on?
It's an absolute beast. It's hard. I've played it a few times now. I've been lucky to play it in the Dunhill Links for the last 4 years. So I know what it's like. I've played it in torrential rain and wind and in glorious sunshine, and I've never played well.
Right.
Never scored well. And it was true to form on Wednesday as well. I was all right. I was better this time round, and there weren't many bogeys.
Right.
There was lots of doubles, right, and lots of pars and a couple of birdies. So
lots of pars, a couple of birdies. I mean, yeah.
It was all right. No,
he's
it was okay.
Off nine.
It was okay.
This
it was okay.
Like a dream,
the tees were a good bit forward. To be honest with you, I drove the ball so well,
right,
that I should have been in every hole.
Right, fair enough.
But I made a couple of doubles, like having wedges in hand and stuff. Yeah, so yeah, it's inexcusable. But I was, yeah, I think when you hit it well off the tee, you expect to score and put yourself in perfect position. Mm-hmm. And no, you fall apart up at the green.
You're Dave Pence.
When you make a double from like having
that's a killer.
A gap wedge in or something.
Do you have the capacity to, given your background, go, right, that was a disaster, but listen, we park it and move on, or is that kind of eating away at you a bit, like the rest of us plebs?
Yeah, it does eat away, but then I suppose a bit like rugby. You know, when I made an error, it would be the big thing is about make sure you don't compound an error with another one.
Yeah.
So the next tee shot, I don't swing harder at that one.
Yeah. Take the skin off the ball, but the next one will be fine.
Yeah, so so I had a really bad double on the second, and I had a shot, and then on the third, it's a 6-iron off the tee, and then I hit a reasonable wedge shot, but it plugged in the bunker, and I hit one of the best bunker shots of my life into about 3 foot,
wow,
and knocked it in. So I was like, oh, it's grand. Yeah. That double, I forgot about it.
Yeah,
and then, you know, bogey the
repeat
next or double
yeah,
the next.
Yeah, yeah, fair enough. Nathan's salivating over there at the
or what, 5 weeks away from
yeah,
the Open?
Well, now, there are obviously the sections of the fairway where you had to play off mats where the okay, pros were going to hit it. But our tees were a good bit forward, so at times you would have been hitting beyond
Center
that.
Approaches.
If you're getting it off the tee, you would have been, you know, beyond those spots. So, we were looking for a lot of balls. You could get into trouble very quickly.
Right.
You know, I don't know what it is about it. It's just, it grinds you. And then because the closing holes, you know, 16, 17, 18 are such a great finish. You know, that 16th par three, it was about 225 with a little bit of downwind, so it wasn't too bad. Mm. It was, I think I hit 6-iron up pin high, but then 3-stabbed. And then 17 into the ravine, made 5 from it. 18 was a long drive, so I really tried to get after it. Yeah. And then so stuck it over a little close to the tee box on 17, and it was just a flick in, and so I made par on that.
Right. Out of the long drive competition, obviously, when you're over that.
I was up, yeah, it's, you know, when you're up level and you know that there was another 10 or 15 if you hit.
Left to be hiding.
Fairway, yeah. So I won it a couple of years in a row. Playing patrons' days. So now the expectation is every time.
Thanks, lads. And you met Gary Player as well, but there's all that good stuff to come, I believe.
I did a little interview with Gary Player. So
interesting
talking
character.
about his fitness, 82 years of age. And
won the fitness challenge between yourself and Gary Player.
Do you know what? He does this thing. Have you seen it on YouTube? He does this thing where with two fingers, he's able to hold two clubs up
No.
In a lateral line. Right. Like, it's actually unbelievable. I've tried it. With one, you can barely get it.
Yeah.
And this is two woods. And he says he's never come across someone that can do it.
Well, I mean, this is...
But he's really chunky fingers. He's not a big man, but solid fingers.
Yeah. When people book Gary Player for these type of events, so, you know, you've done the circuit, you go, you do the after-dinner talks, and you tell a few jokes, and you tell a few inside secrets, and everyone has a good time. Does Gary Player just stand up and give a lesson on life and fitness and how you're all a little bit pudgy out there and you could all be like me at 82?
Yeah, there's a lot of messaging. Some of it, I've been at a couple of them with him before, and some of them you might have heard in the past, but he definitely doesn't turn down the opportunity to impart what his thoughts are. And he's pretty strong opinions on a variety of different things that we won't get into. I don't want to steal the thunder on our interview, but... You know, he's quite friendly with Donald Trump, and you know, he's pretty vocal about that.
So that's something you had in common. Was that like you?
I didn't this time around. I decided to not go there. So
our mutual tremendous great friend. right, listen, we want to talk about a rugby with you. I've been just looking back over your own history because we've sort of read all about this week about the last winning Irish win on Australian soil being the late 70s, whenever it was. And so I wasn't expecting, obviously, for you to book that trend necessarily. So I just had a bit of a look back and realised that I think I was at your second game, it turns out, to think that you wore an Ireland shirt, which wasn't an official cap, against New South Wales. We got hockeyed at the Sydney Football Stadium.
Yeah. I played the week before New South Wales country. I played reasonably well, and then got another.
Did we win that game?
We won that game, yeah. And then we played New South Wales. Matt Williams coached New South Wales, and I went off injured. I got a bad dead leg about 15 minutes in, and I think I managed to make it to half time, and then it was stupid. And I played okay in that half as well, so I thought to myself, he could be considering me for a cap next week. I don't know. I was the consummate professional that evening. Iced and elevated my leg for the day. I got selected the following week.
Yeah, hey presto, yeah. I do remember being out that night. There's Brian O'Driscoll in 1999.
Do you like that tracksuit bottom?
Wistfully. The sandals are, I mean, that's the key.
Contemplating.
They were free sandals, would you believe? Yeah, they used to give us. They used to give us sandals.
I hope they
back
were.
In the day.
Was this you just out doing a bit of sightseeing, and then it just so happens that one of the info photographers?
Yeah. I didn't even know that shot was taken. That's the first time I've ever seen it.
Driscoll ponders his future.
Yeah. I do remember being out that night in Scruffy Murphy's, and as a 22-year-old, 1-year-old, offloading my opinion on the game to Victor Costello that night, and
which I'm sure he enjoyed.
He loved that. Yeah, he really enjoyed it. And then after a while, he went. He turned around to very large Trevor Hogan. This was also sort of
Trevor Brennan,
not Trevor Hogan. All hours of the night, and went, Trevor, this guy here said you were shit today. At which point I went, lads, great charity. I got to get out of here. That's my admission for the day.
But I can't tell you my story.
Yeah, no, I think we'll leave that one off. We can't be mutually giving here, I think, is the short story you're on.
What am I missing out on here?
It's for the post 12 o'clock version of Off
the Watershed.
Right,
probably way beyond the watershed.
I'm not sure there's any appropriate time. Right, you've been watching back the first test, so before we sort of get into the... Because there's a lot to talk about. There's Sean Cronin discussion to be had. There's Joey Carberry discussion to be had. There's changes to this week. Where some of those players sit, where Ireland now sit. Bit of a, obviously, check after the 12-game unbeaten run comes to an end last weekend. So you watched it back. Did you change your mind greatly from... watching the first time around?
No, it was tricky when I was watching the first time because I was looking after my kids as well that morning, and they were out in the paddling pool, so I was...
Never going to get all attention there.
Yeah, it was kind of, there was a lot of pausing, and so you don't get a proper sense, but you need to watch the games live or at least know how they transpire, because if you watch it recorded and you know the result, you watch it with very different eyes. So I needed to see it in real time, even though it was pausing and fast-forwarding and keeping an eye on them in the paddling pool at the same time.
not a 9-point game.
No, it wasn't. It was it was, first of all, I thought it was a great test match. There was errors, yeah. But from a captivating point of view, I thought for a neutral, it would have been a great game to watch because there was very high skill level at times as well. Some great tries scored or some great breaks created. Huge physicality, brilliant at the ruck. And two teams really going at it. Some big collisions. I thought Australia got their defence spot on. Ireland, not so much, and were made pay with some bad defensive errors. But yet they really scrambled brilliantly at other times when they tried to slam the gate shut and passes were gotten out of contact. You know, so again, watching the game this morning, I thought, you know, Keith Earls made a couple of brilliant recoveries from, you know, trying to close the gate ball, being thrown over his head and then chasing out and that sort of scramble. Conor Murray, likewise, he is just, there's no way there's anyone, there's another nine that's a better defensive player in the world. Conor Murray,
right.
Not a chance.
Right.
He is,
as an all-rounder,
as a defensive nine. Yeah. First of all, he is comfortably gold medalist,
right,
in that. Like, and then the rest of his game, obviously, we know about his box kicking and passing, decision making. So, for me, I still think he's the best nine in the world. But his defensive reading and his ability to plug holes and sweep where it's needed and read a play in advance is magnificent.
Serious intelligence behind the
phenomenal intelligence.
Yeah.
And for me, I think he's Ireland's most important player.
Right. Well,
I think he is.
Above Sexton.
I think so. I think we can tick. I was watching Kieran Marmion. I've liked what Kieran Marmion has done since he's anytime he's come in, particularly on the wing a couple of times against England and against Australia, he made some great reads and great hits. And I watched when he came on, his pass is not fast enough for international rugby.
All right.
And that is the ultimate issue. That's why Peter Stringer, stayed in the game for as long as he did, because he had the quickest pass in international rugby.
How can
Conor
not,
Murray's pass is phenomenal.
This is like the uneducated now, but like,
John Cooney's a good pass. I think the order of passes is probably Conor Murray, John Cooney, Luke McGrath and Kieran Marmion.
And so on that basis then, is that your order of selection?
Well, I don't know. I have to see a bit more of John Cooney at this level. Against a better team, and hopefully we might get an opportunity to see that.
Is that the sort of thing you can work on?
Because decision making, I think Cooney's a great athlete, but I just am unsure, is he able to read and play what's in front of him as well as a Luke McGrath or a Kieran Marmion as well. So athletically very good, nice box kicker of the ball, doesn't make many errors, but it's another level at international. And can he, make the right call nearly every time, as what Conor Murray does?
Can you just briefly, can you work on that skill particularly? Like, it does strike me.
I think that's more of a natural thing.
Really?
I do think it is. I think it's the footballing element in guys. He's come on. He's been listened to with not with respect, but you've got to look at his performances for Ulster. People aren't talking about Ruan Pienaar nearly as much as they were at the start of the season on the basis of him having a great season, being their player of the season. So I think huge credit to him for moving from Leinster, going to Connacht, doing his thing, and then going up to Ulster. And he has earned his way into this squad.
One thing on that, and I'm sure form part of our discussion here, but just on that, having watched back the game, does a different Irish team win that game?
I think you can't have David Pocock having the free run that he got. I think you've got to have more of a scavenger there, and I think you get that in. I think if you have Sean O'Brien in your team, that David Pocock doesn't have that joy. I think he was missed. Everyone's talking about you need Levy in there. I think Sean O'Brien is still going to be Ireland's number 1-7.
Really?
Right. I do.
Right.
I think
he's out of mind, isn't he?
He brings a real comfort to a lot of the senior players as well. You talk to the Peter O'Mahony's and the Conor Murray's and the Johnny Sextons and Rob Kearney's, Shawnee has massive respect, and the feeling is that he's one of the best sevens in the world when he's fit. You look at his performances in New Zealand, he was exceptionally good. And he can do everything. He carries, he clears out, he scavenges when he needs to, gets through a huge amount of work rate from a tackling perspective. He does it all. I'm not saying that Dan Levy's been brilliant this year, but he doesn't have the Sean O'Brien factor yet. Mm. He can build it. That takes time for it to come. But that real true respect of being that international test animal for 8, 9, 10 years. Mm. And it only comes with experience and with time. And he will get there. But I think at the moment, Sean O'Brien, you know, if it's a toss-up between the two and both are fit and both are playing really well, I still think Sean O'Brien is number one.
Is that not the difficulty, though, for Joe Schmidt for the next 15 months? Is Sean O'Brien has played such little amount of rugby over the past 15 months, over the past 2-3 seasons, that how does he keep getting these squad get-togethers, putting together a game plan with Sean O'Brien in mind when you kind of no guarantee that he's going to be going to Japan?
No, but Sean doesn't have bad games. Sean rarely has a bad game. A bit like Johnny, his bar is very high. He'd never below a 7 out of 10, and his 7 out of 10 is a lot of other players' 8s and 9s. So I still think he's the guy. He's the guy that when I saw him in a team, his name on the team sheet, I thought we've got an animal on our hands. Yeah. Because he's a thug in there too.
Right.
You want that.
He's
you want that. Yeah. Exactly. In training, he's the sort of guy. If you leave something in or you throw, you know, a dig or you catch him with something, you know, trying to rile him up, he'll floor you.
Really?
Yeah.
Right.
And there aren't a million of those guys, and he's the sort of guy that you want in your team.
It is probably only 6-8 months since we started getting really excited about Dan Levy. So in a year's time, in 15 months, do you see, even going back to the question about the scrum halves, do you see enough characteristics in Levy that he can learn, that he can become the prototype Sean O'Brien if Sean O'Brien isn't there?
He's different. He's slightly different. He's not as capable of creating a hole like Sean. You know, if you need to go forward, Sean knows only one way. He's got good footwork, but he doesn't always feel the need to use it because he is so strong and so powerful. Dan is a little bit more savvy because he understands that if he runs straight, guys will be able to put him down. He's got really good lines of running. He picks, you know, soft shoulders and holes. He's got nice footwork laid at the line. So I think he has all the capabilities of developing into a Sean O'Brien type player. And he's got a bit of a nastiness to him, but not Sean O'Brien.
But that's the point I wanted to come to, because I think there's an element of the Hooper and Pocock stuff where, like, it requires a bit of nastiness, right? Like,
yeah,
it requires a bit of, listen, you should know if you're going in for that ball, I'm coming for you.
It's not technique. That's not technique. It's not, you know, it's not even winning the shoulder. Mm. If Pocock gets in there, once he gets in there, he's almost immovable. But if you have Sean O'Brien, if he goes in there and Sean O'Brien goes and hits him as hard as he can, and he sends his head through up to somewhere close to his backside, he'll know next time. He'll be waiting for it, and that is all you need. All you need to is plant the seed. In even the most experienced of players,
that
doesn't like Pocock, who seems to have no respect for his body. Mm. When you still know that impact could be coming, you mightn't go into that next that next ruck quite with the same enthusiasm you know, with the same intent as you had previously. And Sean is some guy to move people off the ball.
Had he always that bit of a bastard about him?
Always.
So
from day one,
if Levy,
I saw him playing a couple of times with UCD. He always had that rough edge and. I always loved playing with Paul O'Connell was a guy that had that, just someone that can snap.
Yeah.
You know, someone that can lay someone out because they're just getting a bit pissed off at training. Mm. They're the guys that you go, right.
You want, yeah.
So
Levy doesn't quite have that about him yet. I mean, tough skill to sort of skill.
I don't know Levy as well as I know Sean. Yeah. Like, I don't know the person. I've been in a squad with him, and I don't think I was ever on the same pitch with him yet. Right. So I'm 4 years gone, but he was around.
Yeah. He's a character. He's a bit of a free spirit.
Yeah, he is. He's quite different to Sean. But that apart, he looks as though he's all the attributes to being an exceptional seven for many, many years. But just at the moment, if I think if you're picking two guys that are both playing their best rugby, I still think Sean O'Brien just gets the nod.
It goes without saying that Joe Smith wants a response this week, and he came out with the comments that it would maybe somewhat tarnish a Grand Slam season if they end up losing the Test Series. But there must be a part of him that, with all the plaudits that the back rows have been getting, particularly at Leinster, with the way they handle different back rows over the knockout stages of the Champions Cup, that they're coming down and going up against the likes of Pocock and Hooper, and that sort of international class challenge 15 months out from a World Cup, and what the likes of Dan Levy, something he's never faced before, that sudden realisation that actually, if we are to go on, these players need to learn. They need to have these sort of days.
This is a brilliant challenge for Dan Levy, and I'll be intrigued with him and both Hooper and Pocock. Obviously, Pocock, he probably got two more steals that he got penalised for that weren't penalties as well. I don't know. Definitely pilfered a couple, slowed down a lot of ball. It's not all about what you get. It's the delay in committing numbers.
Yeah, just delay by
Ireland
a couple of seconds.
Yeah, exactly. That's a defensive mindset that someone else able to get to their feet and plug the line. And that knock-on effect is line speed, because you've got 10 numbers on feet versus 8, and you get your width and your separation and everything. So those are the moments, and that's why those secondary moments where not just being the tackler. We saw a brilliant one from James Ryan making a huge collision and then getting back up and counter-rucking and then just picking the ball up and off he goes. They are the things that Joe Schmidt absolutely loves. Yeah. So a Pocock, you know, with that energy and that enthusiasm, I think Levy will have studied the game a lot at the weekend and he'll just, you know, he'll be targeting him. And again, I said it last week that, you know, they'll have Pocock jerseys on, bibs on during the week.
Really?
And going,
yeah.
Yeah, and going, right, you know, whoever it is, Tadhg Byrne, you're Pocock this week. The guy's literally just clearing them out.
Wow.
So,
everyone's a fan of him, obviously. There's been some stuff written about Pocock this week and his relationship to the game and all that sort of stuff. But, I mean, back to your point about if you're putting your 15 together, you're pretty happy to see, you know, on the Australian side, obviously, you're pretty happy to see this guy's... he sends you a long way down the track to winning that game last weekend.
Yeah, he was almost the difference. But obviously he scored the try. Someone else might have been able to score that try. He picked a good line, but it's what he did in defence and how he slowed the ball down and how he stole. That's a momentum changer. You steal ball and you get a quick turnover and then Beale gets it and he nudges it into the corner. And that's a 50-metre gain. Mm. You know, from being on the back foot to then all of a sudden 50-metre gain, that it just switches your mentality. Yeah. And all of a sudden you get a line out against the head and bang, you're into it. So it's the margins, it's a 9-point game, but it didn't feel like a 9-point game.
No, it didn't at all. I want to talk about some of the other changes, but before I do that, so we've seen sort of, certainly last week and at certain other points during the Six Nations where the team was, I don't know how much attention you pay to any of this stuff, but the team was revealed mostly, 100% I think it was, across most outlets last week. And then this week it gets revealed yesterday and it's actually not the team at all. I mean, I don't know if Joe Smith is sort of...
I think they're trying to sift it out.
You think he's like throwing out a couple of...
Yeah, I wonder.
Dummy.
Yeah, because there's been a couple of teams that have gotten out recently and I wonder whether...
You think he's like feeding a bit of a line over
trying to
here
work,
and then
trying to work
the,
out who, you know, who...
Wasn't it in Game of Thrones that did that where they sort of... They give away. This is our tactics, and this is where we're going.
Everyone's looking over here.
Yeah, and then we'll they could figure out who was the person with the knife, kind of sticking it in. It's not quite that serious, obviously, but I mean,
well,
he is a guy.
Don't say that to Joe.
Well, exactly,
it's more serious than Game of Thrones.
This is real life.
Yeah.
Well, it does in many ways. It doesn't make sense. And listen, it's good journalism from the rugby correspondents that they have the ins and they can get the team earlier in the week. But when you think back to the start of the last Rugby World Cup, the very first press conference, and how angry Joe Smith was that news had got out of Robbie Henshaw having a slight high strain, I think it was, and missing
Luke Fitzgerald was playing 12, wasn't that it?
Exactly. And
yeah.
No one would have known
that Luke Fitzgerald was going to play 12. But, yeah.
But so there's somebody in the camp, like,
there's a rat and we want to sift
like
them out.
Deep in the camp, right? Because, like, that's...
Jack Nicholson style.
How many people know about that team? Like, Joe.
To the team. And so it's announced on a Tuesday, and then so the lads know on a Tuesday night.
So it's one of the players.
But yeah. Well, not necessarily.
Does Andrew, I don't want to name names. Does Andrew Conway not ring his family and say I'm in and somebody says something?
Yeah, but like I would have told my parents, but
but they're not going to be talking.
They are not saying anything.
There's no avenue there for
I mightn't have told my sisters. Okay. But I'll tell my folks knowing that they're not going to, even in their excitement, particularly if it's, maybe if it's your first cap and a parent lose the run of themselves. But you know, when you've been there a long time and you know and you're told by your son, I'm never going to tell you again if somehow this gets out. And then so I'm sure off the back of it, some guys won't tell their folks or won't tell. Mm. And then agents know as well too. Yeah. There's no doubt more
agents,
people know.
We're getting down to the crux. Because, I mean, I'm just assuming that it's not one of the internal coaching staff. Like, that bond is surely so tight that...
But how many others are there? There's liaison officers, there's baggage masters, there's physios, masseuses. They would, yeah. The masseuses and the doc and all of those would, of course they know the squad, team. Yeah.
Does it matter that the team gets out on Monday or Tuesday?
No, but it's a principle thing.
That's what I think.
It's a principle thing.
I think, like, back to the point,
if we can't keep this to ourselves, then what do we have?
What it is,
There is. I get that.
Because there isn't the GA thing of, like, who really cares? Like, ultimately, it's a couple of different
No, because you get it. Someone will be able to do a bit more analysis on you maybe 24 hours before they have been able to anyway. They still have 48 hours to do that analysis, but it's not to do with the actual team
Find
being announced.
That's what's at play here.
Yeah.
Yeah. So interesting. You do pay attention to it. It turns out that was how I started that one. Now, don't worry about it if you don't pay attention to it. But it's on the Brian O'Driscoll radar, is what we're hearing.
Yeah. I have to be careful.
Say no more. That's also, we also pencil that in for OTB post midnight.
I just think maybe we found the rat.
Right, on that note, Nathan, we're going to, I think, here, because we want to get into some of the conversation, particularly around Sean Cronin and the selection of Hooker for this weekend, and the rationale about why who's in is in and who's out is out. Here's Joe Schmidt on all of that this week.
Noel Skinner was played right through the Six Nations last year for us. He's a guy who, when he got his opportunity against Italy, when Rory Best was injured or unwell, he did a super job for us, and so we're just giving him another opportunity to try to impress. And I think with Niall, he's a good scrummaging hooker, so I think that will add a little bit to an area that we felt we kind of weren't as strong as we normally are. And with Niall in there, it's a really big opportunity for him to probably galvanise that pack and take a step forward at scrum time.
Joe Schmidt is not going out of his way to give a soft landing to a player here who must be hurting pretty badly. Like, he hasn't bent over backwards there to say Sean Cronin is a superb player, we're going to rely on him in the future. He's obviously choosing another tack.
Yeah, he's never that effusive with complimenting players. He's really not. Mm-hmm. And I spent the last two or three years of my career wondering, did Joe Schmidt rate me? And you just never fully get your key to Johnny knows that. Yeah. Conor Murray knows that. But beyond that, everyone else, he almost holds on to this capability of showing that everyone else is dispensable.
Right.
And that's what keeps everyone on their toes.
Everyone gets trained brilliantly
and not making errors and, you know, not wanting to be the talking point on a Monday video session or not taking the easy option. And that's why you get all those double efforts, because guys are constantly trying to prove themselves. Yeah. And it's a great environment to have, because you get the best out of players.
You'd have to assume that Cronin was the brunt of that session on Monday to a degree. He's been the one here who's sort of been the lightning rod, it looks like, for the woes. I mean, he came on after it was 10 minutes in the second half. He's the one who's, it seems as if, is the lightning rod for the woes here, entirely cut from the squad.
Well, you look at that scrum, that big momentum swinger under the post. Australia had a lot of pressure on, and then Caravetti or It was Karevi knocked the ball on, you know, and Ireland had, I think it had gotten up to 14 or 15 phases, pressure off, scrum under the posts, and Australia went after it. And we had Cian Healy and we had Tadhg Furlong on the pitch, just on the pitch at that stage. So whether there was a sense that, you know, is Sean Cronin the weak link in that front row? I don't know anything about
scrummaging. Yeah, how the hell did it?
I don't know.
Does Simon Easterby look at that and go, here's my conclusion from it? Is he talking to the players about it?
I don't know. Well, I looked at it again today and it did look as though Tadhg Furlong got served up on it.
Right.
And, you know, the lads were talking about, oh, they're whip wheeling, but it didn't look like a whip wheel at all. Mm. Didn't look like the tight head on, left hand scrum. So the tight head on the Australian side took a step back and tried to pivot. It just looked as though the left-hand side of their scrum pushed up hard and we crippled. It looked for me, from my uneducated eye, it looked like a good scrum penalty to Australia. So you can't have any complaints. So I don't know where, do the second row have an impact on that? I think Quinn Roo had just come on the pitch. Is he not as good at scrummaging second row as I thought he was? Mm. I thought that was one of his strong points. So I really don't know. I'm not in a position to properly call that because I've been in a scrum once in my life.
I weren't
too many.
Scrum?
I was 12. It was the first game of rugby I ever played, and they were short numbers. And I played, second row.
So, like, is it possible that, look, ultimately, where it is a game of supposing, because we haven't a clue what's going on behind the camp. We don't think he's necessarily injured, but at the same time, he is the one that's missing from the squad. Joe Schmidt isn't necessarily coming out and saying, listen, don't worry about that. He's got plenty of game time to come. He's not coming out, and as you say, maybe that's just actually typical of the way he is. Do you think, is there anything more beyond the
Rob Herring was good. Sorry, Rob Herring was good too. I thought he had a really good showing. I thought his darts were really good. He's not a huge dynamic ball carrier, but he held on to it, and, you know, don't remember any turnovers, made good decisions. So I think the set piece seemed to tick reasonably well while he was on, particularly line out.
Which can coexist with the point that he clearly doesn't fancy Cronin. And so whether that's to do with there was the Six Nations stuff. So whether that's to do with the scrummaging, and it may well be, or whether it's to do with, like, whatever else, work rate around the pitch, I mean, I don't know, but there's something.
And maybe he wants to give Niall Scannell an opportunity to see whether he's his third choice and Sean Cronin is number two. I don't know, maybe...
If I'm Sean Cronin, right?
I wouldn't be delighted if I was Sean
Cronin
either.
And I can't make a matchday squad where Rory Best isn't around. Mm. I'm thinking, I'm not part of this World Cup plan.
And maybe that is the case. Maybe that is the case. I don't know, but it seems pretty severe, you know, considering he was a mainstay player during the Six Nations, played very well, has been really good for Leinster, and on the basis of one 25-minute performance, that now he's persona non grata within the squad.
Well,
you can't imagine that to be the case. No. I think there's more likelihood that he wants to see what Niall is capable of. Right. The fact that he's not on the bench, I think, is interesting. Mm. That maybe he felt rewarding Rob Herring for his performance will shake things up with Sean. Maybe he has plans to start Sean in the third test. Only Joe Schmidt knows what is
coming. At which
point
coming. This conversation
And we're all, exactly, and we're, do you know what, we're, you know, we're chasing what might not be anything close to the thought process of Joe Schmidt.
Yeah, well, so many of those Leinster players who played all the games at the end of the season got a good rest last week. Again, maybe they're looking at different figures and realising he needs an extra week and be back fresh. I do just wonder, though, from your experience, if it is the worst case scenario for Sean Cronin. So he was dropped for the November internationals. He seems to respond the right way. He gets back in for the Six Nations, finishes the season brilliantly. Like, if you've screwed up a second time, do you get a third opportunity under Joe Schmidt?
What's screwed up? You know, he wasn't that terrible in his 25-minute performance. I didn't come away from it going, oh, gosh, Sean Cronin will be really upset with his performance. Yeah. Now, I haven't pulled it apart.
No.
I'm sure Joe Schmidt has.
It's difficult, isn't it? Like, we are definitely supposing a little bit. Just the ultimate point for me is that he's not in the match. Like, this looks like you are the fourth choice hooker. That's what it looks like. I mean, it might all change next week.
He
starts the game. It's like,
and it might. And do you know what? If the two lads play brilliantly well, I would be very worried if I was Sean Cronin.
One final one on that one. Is the Ireland forward game plan, in so much as you can tell, and the Leinster forward game plan, just are they such vastly different things that he can seamlessly fit into one, and as you say, obviously win the Champions Cup, win the Pro 14, have a fantastic season, and then the other one is just so different.
No, they're not that dissimilar. They're not that dissimilar, and there'll be very similar roles for a hooker in both. Yeah, yes, the small modification, because I think Ireland are probably try and set things up a little bit to have a strike play on phase 3-4, whereas I think there's more scope to get after it earlier from a Leinster perspective. And obviously, a grade down, your ball carrying looks way more effective in European Cup than it does internationally.
And in fairness, that is
that's
one
the
of
reality
his main
of everything.
Too, right?
Like, but that's also the reality of everyone.
Right.
The time and space that you have as a 10 in Europe versus international is, you know, massively different.
Yeah,
and the pressure, scrum time, every position, and the attributes of what necessitates you to be a good test player. If you achieve them, that means you're a really top class European player.
Yeah, and like the reality is that for the layman like me, who, as Victor Costello will tell you, knows nothing about the game, like you see Sean Cronin making a 15-20 yard dash and you're like, geez, that Sean Cronin had a great game today. I mean, what, he's totally stuffed up the scrum. But anyway, look, let's press pause on that one for a week. We can come back in a bit more evidence-based next week. The midfield is obviously one of the other key areas that we want to get your thoughts on. So Robbie Henshaw and Gary Ringrose start at 12 and 13 this week. Will you pick through the midfield for us from last week a little bit? I mean, the Henshaw, Aki access, and why he's looked to tweak that up a bit, and a bit of analysis on Henshaw's performance as well, because I know a lot of people were critical of him.
Yeah, and I lauded him during the season for his partnership with Gary. Defensively, they were brilliant against Saracens in particular. I thought it was a defensive masterclass. And I heard Matt Williams and Eddie earlier on in the week talking about, you know, about Andy Farrell, you know, sending Robbie Henshaw as a shooter. You know, I don't think that was the case. I think Robbie made those reads himself. And yes, at times they were trying to play hard up and stop the ball. But on a couple of occasions, particularly obviously the one that that Beale slipped off and then Stockdale came across and made that unbelievable hit on Corabetti, and then the second one was, which led to the try, which was on Foley, where he got the quick hands away and then ended up scoring the try himself. That is always the danger against Australia. They're the one team that, particularly with playmakers like Beale, Corabetti, and someone with the footwork of Folau, who gets in at first receiver as well, It's risky.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that retrospectively, because they slipped away a couple of times. They're the one team that I would give maximum respect to, of being able to pick you apart, because they get their spacings really well. I think they looked really good off set piece, and Ireland were conceding big yards unless they decided to completely slam the gate shut, and they almost got caught another once or twice on that. So I think that's an area that they can cause Ireland more upset this coming weekend, because they've got such good ball players in multiple positions. Mm. Even Hayla Petty is a nice ball player. Corabetti's an absolute animal. Maybe not the skills, but he's got the grunt and the go for it. And Karevi, a bit similar to Corabetti. I just love the look of their back line at the moment. I wouldn't love defending it as a 13.
If he's jumping out the line, just on that point that you make, if he's jumping out the line that you think is sort of, he's kind of doing this in his own bat as opposed to it being any instruction, is that just something that just gets very easily shut down this week, where they go back to the pitch and they say, listen, We're not doing that this weekend?
I think so. I think the cardinal rule is, if you're going to shoot out of the line, you've got to stop the ball. And he missed it twice. And and another time, Jordan Larmour actually came in and solved a problem when another one got away, managed to get away, and he slammed it shut. And Earls did it another time, where one was thrown over his head and he chased and scrambled. So it looked as though Ireland were susceptible and vulnerable there. So whether they just decide to plug a little bit more and work as a unit with Johnny It's obviously the Leinster three-quarter line.
Yeah. Is there some of that that impacts his decision to do that last weekend, that he's looking around him and he sees Joey Carberry here and he sees Bundiaki outside and he's like, there's not the cohesion that might be there with the other players?
I think there's definitely something in that. Mm. I think Bundy looked a little bit off the pace. I think he got turned over once or twice when, almost he was... not devoid of ideas, but he wasn't sure. He got caught in two minds a couple of times and got hit hard. And then a brilliant counter-up from Australia. There was one really crucial one in the lead-up to the Folau try that wasn't, where he was the one that got turned over when he was looking inside and out and he got smacked by Karevi. I'm not surprised to see Robbie and Gary. I think, to be honest with you, Robbie and Gary are the first choice centre pair.
Are they? I was going to ask you that,
I think so. I do think so. I think Gary offers us something that no one else can at 13. And defensively, he's very, very good, very clever, savvy, makes those reads extremely well, but knows the timing of them. I think Robbie just gave himself a huge amount to do, to make up a lot of yardage to then get to someone who then had the scope of getting a little bit of late feet when he's coming really hard. Mm. The time to slam the gate is when it's only 3 or 4 yards that you have to travel. When you have to travel 8 or 9, I think it plays into the hands of the attacker. Yeah. Because you can drift on a pass that might be coming, depending on how the pass is thrown to you. You see someone shoot, you can take it late. You shift yourself and wait for the ball to come across them. Or if you think you're going to get hit, you attack the ball and you get to the inside shoulder and then try and throw the pass out around the back. So, you have to really pick and choose your moments to shoot as a 13. I got lots right, but I got a few wrong as well. And when you get them wrong, you can really hurt your team.
Yeah, in that environment too. So, look, you get another chance this weekend. We'll see how that goes. We're almost out of time. One thing that I definitely wanted to talk to you about was about how to solve a problem like Folau. I know Eddie was making the point on Monday, I think, that we were, not only were Australia kicking to him, we were kicking to him a little bit as well. Is that a straightforward fix, an easy fix? I mean, what are they? Is it
unless you play Devon Toner in the backfield? I don't know. You don't fix that. He's better than anyone in the world in the air.
That's the Conway wing this weekend, isn't it?
That catch, from the semi. It was like it's that Ireland do it quite regularly as well in their exit plays, where it's a kick just inside your 22, but it's a halfway house. It's long enough to get out of your own territory, but it's with a lot of hang time, so you can get a compete in the air or you can get a contact when the player catches it. So the one that Murray got absolutely annihilated by Carbetti, that sort of one. It's a pseudo Gary Owen with a bit of length. And Sexton really likes it too. So the one that one where he caught it above his head when Murray was kind of clutching for it was an unbelievable piece of skill. And you can see that AFL capability, and he did it so many times playing NRL as well, rugby league down there, and those crossfield kicks, he's almost undefendable. And what's really interesting, I saw it in the Lions tour in the past, he uses Genia sometimes as well when he's going for them. So when he's going in traffic, Genia will present his back to him.
Right.
And he'll get a knee into it.
A little bit of knee up, right?
Yeah, and then an extra elevation. Right. So, when you see Rob Kearney being dominated in the backfield by someone, they're pretty spectacular in the air. And I don't know how you solve that problem. I do think that both teams... One area that Ireland can go after them is they can shift it into midfield and then put those little nudges, as Beale did once or twice, in behind the winger, because I think Folau plays quite far back. I don't think he wants to close the gate. I don't think he wants to defend a huge amount.
Right. He's happy
enough. He expects his team to get the job done on their own.
I don't see it, lads.
I don't really. I'm like a last-minute insurance policy. So I think both teams are going to go to that. I think, 10 passes it to 12 or 13, immediately it triggers the winger to go, okay, they're playing out the back here. And that little dink in behind, or the little grubber in behind, where the 15 is closing onto it, or the ball's going along the ground, and with a rugby ball, it can bounce anyway. That's a nightmare scenario for a 15. So I reckon Ireland will go to that because of how Australia slammed the gate shut. I think they caught Ireland this week, or last week, with how much they were playing up and in. Ireland won't be caught out twice in a row.
That out ball then was so important for Ireland from just inside the 22 with Murray during the Six Nations. Do you just suck it up and say, listen, Australia are the one team that can really kill us on this? Or do you have to go back to the drawing board a little bit and think, actually, now we're playing an absolute quality team like Australia with a full back of the quality of Folau, that maybe we need to lessen it, not use it quite as often, and come up with a different game plan?
I think what you have to do is you don't kick to him, because he's a brilliant encounter as well.
As simple as that.
I think you've got to kick on Karabedi. I think there's massive question marks around him. Haile Petty, very good in the air. Clearly, he had a couple of balls. I think Karabedi's the guy that you put some snow on the ball and land them down on him. I think Michael Checkett, you know, has done his homework, because he saw Conor Murray, who's very brave and okay in the air, but you know, that opportunity to get a shot from Karabedi on him is, you know, that early in a game is
comfort.
A dream.
Yeah.
Expect that again, because that's what happens with Ireland's defensive system now. You either get 10 and 15 in the backfield or 15 and 9. And when they see 9 back there, well, you see they'll put some more up there
as a physical, for all the physicality that he has and the player, like, I mean, he's a big scrum half.
He's so durable. Yeah. He gets these incredible collisions and looks as though, you know, he rolls ankles and knees and gets caught in horrible positions, and it looks like it's game over, and then he shakes it off. The Wales game last year was the only game that I remember, and he still played on for 20 minutes when his shoulder was in bits. And I don't think he played for a few weeks after that. I don't know if he played the rest of the Six Nations. So, he is super tough and has a real durability to him, and that's why I just, the more I watch of Ireland, the more I think that Conor Murray's our most valuable player, MVP.
Right, we'll have all of that. 11 o'clock tomorrow is kickoff. It's clashing with Australia versus France, which Nathan's already committed to.
Well, we've two screens here, Adrian.
Watching the football.
Split screen.
Look at him.
Screen.
Look at him stick on the old reverse lights now.
No. I'll be watching France Australia. I've committed to the World Cup.
You were on last night saying.
But I do have to talk about this game for an hour tomorrow, so I'd want to watch at least 20 minutes of it.
Yeah, that's probably important.
Ireland to get it done tomorrow?
Yeah, I think they will. I just think with Johnny back at 10, it's a pretty stacked team. Maybe not first choice yet, because I still think Henderson's probably just ahead of Toner in the second row.
Or something, is he?
But other than that, you know, with Hooker, I don't know. We can continue talking about that. Who knows?
We'll save that for next week.
And then Conway, a great opportunity for him. I think I'm glad to see he's getting some game time. We know what's stuck there. So I think it's a really strong Ireland team, and I think I expect them to be a bit more clinical with their opportunities. They created some great chances last week. They just didn't put any away. So I don't think that'll happen 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah, and there's no point in probably, like, whatever happens tomorrow, to some degree, even in terms of injuries and all that, dictates a little bit of the third week as well. So
yeah, we'll. You won't
no,
see.
No
you'll
great
see,
pronouncements.
You'll see. Yeah, you'll see changes again for the third test, no doubt. So I think Ireland are going to win by 5.
Right. Good stuff. Thanks a million.
Cheers.
Off the ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.